I'd like to welcome everybody to Devi Happy Hour. This is episode 3. We are here to provide Devi insight and ways to improve your Devi rosters, as well as a look at the college football landscape and the NFL draft, which is what we're focusing on right now. With each episode, you can find us on Twitter at Devi Happy Hour and our email, DeviHappyHour@gmail.com. Before we get our rock and rolling here, our special thank you to Tyler Gunther at @DHH_Tyler for reaching out to us to give us another avenue to provide us Devi information to the masses. And today is Valentine's Day. Let me introduce my host, the lovely Andrew.
Dwight, I missed you last week. It's so nice to be talking again.
Aw, so many cuddle. I'm the big spoon.
No, we have to keep the Valentine's Day theme with that, right?
Yeah. We're recording this the night before. Like, if we were recording this on Valentine's Day, we'd probably be getting killed right now.
Yeah, we would both be single. And I would be paying a lot of alimony and child support and never be able to afford anything ever again.
We'd have more time to research, but
we'd get better content.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna dive into the news of the week, because we got some pretty good Big Tens this week for you guys. The big news of the week probably is Kyler Murray. He is officially committed to playing football. He said he's gonna be in the combine. He's gonna forego any baseball activities. So that's some pretty big news, and I think we're all waiting to hear that.
Yeah, thank God he just picked one at this point. I'm right. An Oakland Athletics fan, and I even said that. I think it was Brian from Trade Addicts. He was, like, mad at people bashing his decision. I said, just at least he picked one. I mean, now we don't – he's not going to be playing hardball with both leagues, really. I still think there's the potential for him to maybe go to the Athletics. I really hope it's just completely squashed. I don't think he makes this decision unless he hears he's going to be a top pick. So now it's just going to be – couple days has been Kareem Hunt and Kyler Murray, and my boss, every time I'd come out of the back room from doing some sort of inventory or grabbing a phone, he would just come up to me and be like, "Hey, did you know Kyler Murray declared and he's just gonna stick the football now?" I go, "No, you know what? I haven't heard that anyway." It's funny, and he doesn't even follow it that well, so it's interesting to see what's gonna happen with it. I definitely think he's a better football prospect than a baseball prospect. I saw somewhere where they had him on ESPN through their ranking process. He was like the 107th overall prospect, and he was taken in the top 10. And Mel Kiper and Todd McShay are just blowing all sorts of smoke up his arse. So it's just one of those things. That quarterback position is going to be overvalued to the max, and he's a perfect example of it.
Right, and the buzz for him going to the Cardinals, number one, is deafening at this point. Like, it's – you don't know how much of it's real. I don't think it's real. I think it's a crazy move, but it seems to be like pretty. And he definitely he fits Kingsbury's system, and I think he'd be a great quarterback for him. But it just seems like kind of a waste and a step back almost. But
my thing is, if Kingsbury wasn't on video saying I love Kyler Murray, and him having the number one overall pick, and like it's there, he can just take it. Now, I don't think Rosen, the trade value, is going to be that great for him. Like, he was the 10th overall pick last year. I don't think they get that type of return on him. I don't think, like, the Giants give up 6 or anything like that. Despite I like him more than any of the prospects coming out this year. I mean, the Giants can just get better value there, and potentially a little bit cheaper. And just I think if anything, and this is what pains me, is I had a little thread where I put out, I said, Washington and Miami, because they have 13 of 15, they might overpay for a quarterback. I don't think they will, but they could. But the team that's in the perfect position to get them if they want to trade out is New England with their 12 picks. They've got a bunch in the second, third, and fourth. And Belichick works the draft system. He doesn't always nail his picks, but he knows how to work the system. And like I said, it pains me to say it, but if they can get Josh Rosen with Belichick, I mean, there's football for the next 10 years potentially.
Right, I really like that match there. They Arizona's left in a position where they have a lot of options now, more than they did before, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's going to be the huge news coming the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. If they trade Rosen, like they lost a lot of draft capital moving up last year to get him at 10.
Right,
they gained that back. So
right, exactly
opposite of what Denver's been doing today, giving up fourth round picks for overpaid quarterbacks.
Right. Yeah, the money aspect of that. Anyways, that's an NFL show.
Right.
Flacco is very, very far removed from college. So another big news, and kind of one that I think is going to start off a set of dominoes, is Justin Fields was cleared to play next year at Ohio State. Instantly makes Ohio State a ton better. Makes them, if they weren't the odds-on favorite in the Big Ten, they definitely are now. And I think it's going to create a system where transfer and play is going to be more and more common, I think, because he didn't have the strongest case. And I was talking to some coworkers about it. You know, maybe these guys should be allowed one free transfer, you know, because these guys make this decision when they're like 16 years old.
Right.
And a lot changes in a couple years. And I definitely can see his side of it. You know, you think you've got a path to a starting job, then all of a sudden you don't. And you're kind of stuck. So I like that they allowed him to play, but I think it's going to open the floodgates, which may not necessarily be a bad thing because these colleges make a ton of money off these kids anyways.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing with Fields is, I mean, like you said, maybe one free transfer. I'm okay with that. But in the Justin Fields situation, and I'm not bashing him in any way, but I'm just saying, look at the whole picture with this. He committed after true freshman Jake Fromm led Georgia and made Jacob Eason transfer. Because he played so well. Jacob Eason, people are talking about the Heisman and being a top quarterback prospect next year. Made Jacob Eason transfer. So your thought is, after you beat out Trevor Lawrence for being the top quarterback in high school, to be, I have my pick of the litter of colleges from everywhere, from Colgate all the way up to Ohio State and USC and whatnot. He is like, I'm going to go to the school where they just had a true freshman lead him to the national championship and come away from one overtime score from winning it. Like, well, I understand the rationale with that. Like, go somewhere where if you want to play right away, you can play right away. Did you think Jake Fromm was going to come out and just play like complete ass? I don't like to swear on this, but it's just, it's something that I don't want to say has fired me up because it's getting that reaction out of me, but it's just one of those things, like, come on. It's like when you go to a bar you know is a bad place, and then you get into a fight and you tell the police, I don't know what happened. Well, you went there. You knew what the environment right. was. So,
yeah, I understand. That's what I mean. He didn't have a strong leg to stand on in this case, I didn't feel. So if we make it – if this becomes the precedence, then just let it be the precedence. You know, like let them have one where they can play right away, you know. And
I think you hit the nail on the head, though, as far as with money goes, because Tate Martell is already gone. He was already at Miami. And he's committed and he's transferred and everything, which who knows if he's going to play or not. I don't think he will this year. Ohio State didn't have a big name quarterback. And if you're the NCAA, that's one of your big moneymakers, I'm sure. I mean, they're always on national television, ESPN, Fox, FS1, whatever. So you don't want your top echelon program and moneymaker potentially rolling out some quarterback with no national attention. So I'm not right. saying that's why they approved it, but I could see that being an off the record conversation they had, be like, hey, we could get the top quarterback prospect at a big school with a lot of names and media and advertising and whatnot.
Oh yeah. I think you would honestly be lying to yourself if you didn't know that was part of it. You know, there had to have been some back, like you said, backdoor conversations that, you know, if he wasn't going to Ohio State with a clear path to start for a national power, they may not have let him play right away, but that has to play in the decision. You can't tell me any different on that. So another big news, Jeffrey Simmons, who is projected to be a top 15-ish pick. He is tore his ACL the other day, so he's going to most likely miss the rest of this year. He was not invited to the combine due to a domestic dispute that he had in high school. But he's one that had quickly climbed up the draft boards. If it weren't for that domestic dispute and everything, he might even be talked about in the top 5 to 7 players. But now he's likely going to slip quite a bit. I see him probably falling in the second round, but that's pretty huge news. Timing, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, anybody in the second round that gets him is going to get a steal. I mean, I'd be totally okay with Cleveland nabbing him with their second round pick. Pairing him opposite Myles Garrett on that defensive line, I'd totally be okay with that. And then any team. And nowadays with the ACL, I mean, positions are different, but most often than not, medicine's advanced enough that people are able to bounce back pretty quickly from the ACL as long as there's no nerve damage, which it doesn't sound like it was anything over the top severe-wise, like a Jalen Smith type of injury. So, no, he's going to lose some money now, but he'll definitely earn it back once he gets on the field and starts to play. And the team's going to get a great value with him too.
Right. On to another pass rusher. I actually hadn't heard this yet, that Jalen Ferguson, who's the NCAA sacks record holder all time, he had his combine invite revoked. I actually had not heard that, Andrew.
Yeah, no. I was closing up at work and I saw it pop up that he had his combine invite revoked because of a simple battery charge that had popped up in his past. Wasn't anything domestic or anything like that. It was a fight at a McDonald's. And
that would definitely be simple battery.
Right. And I saw somebody in the comments, it was pretty funny, was he probably went after 9 o'clock and they were done making McFlurries, which irritates every one of us, but because they were cleaning the machine. But that, it doesn't sound like the Ferguson thing. I just heard about it. I didn't read into it, so I don't want to speculate on how right. severe or unsevere it is, but it doesn't sound like anything too bad at this point. But yeah, I just saw that there and I thought I'd throw that on for us as well. It's just, and it's one of those things I saw, I think it was John Ledyard said, this will be what people will cite now is for his fall in the draft. It wasn't his talent before, whereas not a lot of people are super high on him in the draft community, but now draft Twitter has an excuse to explain why he would fall.
Right. Despite being the NCAA sack record holder for all time, he was kind of one of those tweener, you know, not quite big enough to be a defensive end, not quite small enough to play the defensive, you know, the outside linebacker. You know, I think the combine would have helped him some, especially after his showing in the bowl games and stuff. So,
yeah, he was great down in Mobile. Jim Nagy put out a tweet supporting him as well, saying everything he saw down in Mobile the whole week spoke to that. He's a good man. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, these guys, yeah, they deserve a second chance. So it's not the end of the world, but it will probably put him down in, I would say, probably still third or fourth round now, unless somebody just really loves him, falls in love with him.
Right.
And last bit of news, we didn't even know if we were going to touch on this, but Maurice Washington, the running back from Nebraska, has a warrant out for his arrest for some, I'm not going to go into details because it's pretty messed up. And the more I read about it, the more it pissed me off. So,
right. Yeah. No, yeah. I said to Dwight, I said, we can just touch on it and say he's basically a worthless own in any Devy leagues if you had him at this point. So he's, right. If these guys are getting uninvited from the combine because of this, that, and the other, he'll be lucky to get any sort of college football playing the rest of his life. If anything, he'll have to wait till he's old enough to play pro somewhere where they'll give him a chance.
Go to the AAF.
He can get blindsided like that quarterback did. I'd be okay seeing him get hit like that.
God, it was fun to see that and not get a penalty called on it. I love that, man.
And then you got the whole CTE thing, which kind of puts a damper on it when you look at it. But anyway,
all about
the positive.
Good, the bad, you know, whatever. All right, this week we're going to do kind of a fun one for the Big Tens. We're going to do a couple of offensive players, one defensive player. For our first Big Tens, we're going to do a matchup, kind of a – I'm just going to call it the tail of the tape. Two heavyweight tight ends that are coming out this year, Noah Fant, TJ Hockenson, both from Iowa. I'm going to do a quick tail of the tape of Noah Fant, and then we're going to do 10 minutes on him, break down what we saw and stuff like that. The tail of the tape for Noah Fant. He is 6'4", approximately 245 pounds. He turns 22 in November. He's been a full-time starter for two seasons at Iowa, where he, in 2017 as a sophomore, he had caught 30 balls for 494 and 11 touchdowns. Last year, he caught 39 balls for 518 and 7 touchdowns. Most people's consensus tight end one, but I think the distinction is very, very slim there. So we're going to start the 10-minute timer. Andrew, what is the first thing that you see when you watch Noah Fant on tape?
A big body that's super athletic and is going to be a great pass catcher at the next level. It's just going to be so refreshing. I mean, we had the influx of Njoku and Evan Engram a couple years ago as pass catching tight ends to make an immediate impact. And Hunter Henry was supposed to be that, but he keeps getting hurt. I think Noah Fant, if he goes to the right team with the right system, I've seen him mocked anywhere from Jacksonville to Dallas, which I think him at Dallas would be insane, to New England being the obvious one to replace Gronk. I think if he goes somewhere like a Dallas or a New England, it just would be fantasy-wise, I think he'd be a great value.
Right. The first thing that stood out to me is his acceleration. Holy
heck. Oh, yeah.
Like when not just off the line, but out of cuts. After he catches the ball, like he just has this gear and he hits it quick. He doesn't move like a typical tight end, that's for sure. His acceleration's ridiculous. So that's your first impression. Now, what did you love about his game overall? Like, what are some other things that you saw that really stood out?
I just loved his ability to, like, track the ball and adjust to it and, like, contort his body to make certain catches. He's not going to do anything like an Odell Beckham type, but he will go up with both his big paws, track the ball down, and he'll go over a safety, a corner, a linebacker, whatever, come down with it, and then when they try to tackle him, he'll break that tackle, and then, like you said, shows that burst and breakaway speed, and he'll get to the end zone. So that's one of my favorite things about him, is just his ability to adapt to the ball as a pass catcher. I think that's huge towards his success.
Right, that's the same thing I noticed, was the pass catching. Technical, it's not as good. He let it get into his chest a little bit occasionally. I saw a couple of them where he doesn't fight as strong with his hands, but he's still a tight end. I mean, you know, I think I was kind of expecting, sometimes you get caught in that expectation of what we see from wide receivers, you know, that they just like can go around a defensive back and grab the ball over the helmet, you know, and stuff like that. And Noah's a tight end, but, you know, so there's a couple times where I wanted to see him do that, but you cannot, I mean, he just, wow, what a great pass catcher. Like, he's just phenomenal. And then there were some things that I didn't like. Like, pretty much everybody has said the same thing on this, that blocking is pretty much his. But at the same time, I watched a lot of tape on him, and he's an adequate blocker. His inline blocking, he's not going to go up strength to strength, because he is 6'4", 245. So he's, you know, he's going up against defensive linemen that are the same height that have 40 pounds on him and can lift probably three times what he does. So when he goes, you know, toe to toe with him, but his blocking was adequate. He seemed like he could, you know, push guys out of the way and out of the way of the play. So it wasn't horrible, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a couple times I wrote how, like, inline blocking, he was getting his lunch ate. Like, I literally wrote that down as my note. Just another thing, too, I like to watch the player as the play progresses. Sometimes if there's a play where you could tell he's not going to be involved, he just kind of is like, whatever, and he walks through it a little bit. Everyone does that. I've probably written that down for every prospect I've watched.
You see it a lot more at college level, that's for sure.
Except Debo Samuel, maybe, because he just likes to hit people. That's a little thing I've noticed. And in the grand scheme of things, it won't matter too much into his stock and everything. And then, like you said, too, just the poor blocking in general at times. But it's not nothing where you're going to be like, oh, my gosh, he's just a complete problem for us, and we can't
– right.
We have to double-team whoever he's lined up across. He'll be able to hold his own long enough that the play can develop.
Right. I actually thought he was, like, a better blocker than, like, an Evan Engram even, you know, which is someone who, because of his – the way he is going to catch a lot of comparisons. What do you think he's going to do at the combine? Like, how do you think he's going to show out there?
I think he is going to show off very well. I think he'll probably interview well. Everyone's going to want to compare him to Kittle. I think both Iowa tight ends this year are going to have that problem just because of the amazing year he's coming off of. But, I mean, I think as a pass catcher in the cone drills and the 40 time, I think he's really right. Going to show. I think if he posts an impressive 40 time, we could see him jump up, even in some insane world, maybe the top half of the first.
I think he's going to – you said I think the combine is going to be good for him. The speed, the agility, the three cone, I think he's going to just pummel those. I don't think he'll be the strongest cat there. So I definitely – I see that will probably be his weakness in the combine, but he's not that – you know, he's not going to be that guy that bench presses defensive linemen. So.
No.
Is there anything else? Like, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say before we did the player comp, because I'm not a big player comp person, but –
Yeah, it's tough with a comp for him just because you don't want to make the obvious one, which is the number he wears. He wears one sleeve, which kind of looks like an elbow brace, and so on and so forth. But if you want to even – I've made the comp before on when we did that double show for the owner's manual. I was pounded the table for Noah Fant. Chris and Adam are going to want to punch me in the face after they listen to this, but – it's just he's not as good of a blocker as Gronk, and he's not as good of a blocker as his teammate that we're going to talk about. Great. So it's just one of those things. As a receiver, he's fantastic. If I were to compare him to somebody, though, I'd probably say Njoku, just because Njoku's very athletic. He's not the greatest blocker either, but at the same time, if there's a jump ball I want to get, I'm going to trust Fant and I'm going to trust Njoku.
I'm going to probably catch some shade for this one. I'm not the greatest at comps. I'm not going to. But he kind of reminded me of Eric Ebron in college. Like,
I know, like that. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, Ebron was a beastly pass catcher coming out of college, and he forgot his hands for his first couple of years in Detroit, and now it looks like he's kind of come back around. I could see Fant playing that. I think he'll catch more balls than Ebron. He won't be quite as touchdown dependent, but you like a lot about Fant. He'll be drafted. Remember, Ebron was drafted like 10th overall that year. I could see Fant going into the top 12 or 15. Like you said, with a good combine showing, possibly.
I don't think it's insane for Jacksonville to take him at 7. I don't think they should take him at 7, but no. I think if there's a run on quarterbacks and they don't want to pay that price to trade up, I think they just sit back and settle for best available. And there's still free agency available. Like, if you get Nick Foles to come down there to Jacksonville, why not give him another weapon and Noah Fant at number 7?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because their wide receiver crew is not the greatest. So
Fant would have Westbrook, and who I think is a free agent. And then DJ Chark. I mean, come on.
No, I think Fant would be the best pass catcher there instantly.
You got Sean Asanasi there. I can't even say his name right.
Right.
Michael Rivera. Fant,
I think Fant's going to be one of those guys. He's going to make an impression year one. He will be a starter year one, and he will be very productive year one. So I like everything about him. I really liked. But being said, this is probably most people's second tight end on the list, and he was also his teammate at Iowa, T.J. Hockenson. Little tale of the tape: T.J. 6'4", 250. He turns 22 in July. He is a redshirt sophomore, so he started his redshirt freshman year. He played in 10 games, caught 24, 320, and 3 touchdowns. And this last season caught 49 balls for 760 and 6 touchdowns, 15.5 yards per catch on that. And we'll get right to our Big Ten for him. So what was the first thing that popped out on tape when you watched T.J. Hockenson play?
My favorite thing about him, we talked about how Fant kind of takes some plays off at times. Hockenson looks for somebody to hit, whether he's involved in the play or not, which I really like. I mean, with his frame, he's got a little bit more weight on him as well, like you just said. So he's able to kind of throw his body around a little bit more, and he's able to beat up on some defenders that aren't necessarily paying attention or caught out of position. So that was, for me, one of my things I liked. I just like physical football. And as a tight end who can be a great pass catcher, I think he's the perfect Iowa tight end, where I think the George Kittle comparisons everyone wants to make to the Iowa tight ends, I think, makes more sense because he's a good blocker like Kittle. So that was the first thing that popped out for me, at least.
Right. And mine's the same thing. He's just tough. Like, he's always hitting somebody. He's always looking for some play. He blocks, even if it's not coming anywhere near him. He doesn't shy away from, you know, lowering his shoulder or smacking somebody. He's just a blue collar player. And what's funny is you look at their pictures, they look like the entirely opposite player, like the entirely opposite, even type of person. Like, I saw a picture of Fant where he looks like very booky. You know, he had like these glasses, you know, he looked very smart and intelligent. And Hockenson just looks like just a grinder, you know, like someone who's just going to thump people, almost like a middle linebacker. So,
yeah, Hockenson could get away with not wearing gloves. And
right.
He just looks like an old school. I mean, he won the John Mackey Award. He looks like a John Mackey type throwback player.
All right. So that's after the first thing. What do you love about his game? What is everything you like about it?
I just love the effort he puts in. I mean, with the blocking and the receiving, and he'll run over guys, and he doesn't try to run out of bounds. He's always trying to fight for the extra yard. I think he's going to have a phenomenal career no matter where he goes. And honestly, I like him way more for, like we just talked about, Fant going number 7. I would pound the table more for Hockenson going that high, just because, like, say, Jacksonville with their power run scheme with Fournette for now and Doug Marrone, you want a good blocking tight end. And Hockenson's going to do that for you. He'll clear the path. He'll be the lead blocker on a Fournette run, in which teams are going to look for those little things to kind of break the tie on players. For Fant, he has the athleticism advantage. And then for Hockenson, he's got the more physical strength advantage. So that's probably my favorite thing for him, is just the physicality he plays with and the kind of edge he plays with. It's just something you can't coach that into a player. They just have it or they don't.
Right. I saw there were multiple plays when they'd line him up as like almost like an up back, like, you know, behind like the a guard or tackle.
Yeah.
Like they would line him back. They almost like he was a fullback even, you know, and they moved him around a little bit. He didn't go wide. Like Fant, they would split Fant wide quite often. Fant wide
up a receiver a couple of games.
Yeah. Oh, quite a few. Yeah. And Hawkinson was always right in the formation. Yep. So I loved just, he's very complete. I like the blocking, his catching. He's got great hands. We're seeing one catch, I think it was against Penn State, where it was raining and he didn't have gloves on and he did like snatch the ball out of the air. And he's got, like, you tell they're really soft, good hands, you know, and his football IQ. I mean, he looks like he's just been playing football every day for his entire life. You know, he's just love to watch him, man, which leads to the weaknesses. I don't see a lot of weaknesses in his game. He doesn't have like deep speed, maybe, and maybe yeah. He doesn't have any elite skills. But he's just very, very good at everything, it felt like.
Yeah, no, I had a lot less bad written down about him than I did Fant. My cons for him, I just said that the offense is kind of more geared towards Fant. So Hawkinson didn't have the flashy stats, but I mean, obviously he was good enough to get the Mackey Award. And then just the small sample size, just because Fant was the centerpiece of that offense, everybody knows it. And I think that kind of helped with Hawkinson and his success just a smidge. I think he still would have been fine regardless. But, yeah, no, it's just the athletic ability is the only thing maybe. But at the combine when they're going to be testing all that, if he runs well and he just moves well, it's going to be a question that nobody has.
Right. So
I love Hawkinson. I mean, I'm sure we're going to break into it even more, but I'll just start it off. I mean, I have my tight ends are done being graded. And I score him on 25 points. Fant got 20.5 points on the five things I grade combined. And Hawkinson got 21. So I have them separated by a half a point. That's how close they are. And that half a point was really the blocking is what it came down to. I could argue the same thing that I could have Fant number one by half a point because of the athletic ability. But I just liked Hawkinson more as his overall game. I had less gripes about it, and he just plays more like a tight end. Like you said, he's right in the formation. He's in the backfield. He's lining up on the line. He can handle the line. So for me, that's just what made the difference there for those two.
Right. It goes down to what a team wants, what's more important to them. Like I personally also am going Hawkinson as my number one just because I like that more traditional tight end. He can still play the pass catching role fine, but I like what he brings the whole thing to the plate. How do you think he's going to do at the combine?
I think he might look a little robotic in his movement, not like in a bad sense, but just kind of like he's such a clean prospect that he won't seem as loose as say Fant will just because of the way their bodies are. But I think he'll still be okay. I think he'll run decent. I don't think he'll break. Like, I mean, if he runs a fast 40, then I'll be shocked. But, fast being like 4.5s range, I could see him. I mean, he's going to run a sub 5, obviously. But
I was thinking 4.6-ish.
Yeah, 4.6. I mean, even a bad one as a 4.7, I'm fine with that. His thing is going to be he may not run the fastest, but if a player catches up to him, he's just going to drop a shoulder or a helmet and just run over him. So that's one of those things where he'll beat him with his size, or Fant has to beat him with his speed.
Right. I think he's going to almost be the polar opposite of Fant. His speed won't be as impressive. His three cone will be, I think, all right.
Yeah.
But then he'll kill on like the strength and stuff. And he's going to, yeah, just a fun player to watch. Now, do you have a player comp for him? Is there anybody?
A healthy Hunter Henry. just because size is a little bit similar, the way their pass catching is. Henry's nothing over the top athletic. Like, he was a perfect complement in San Diego to Antonio Gates. Antonio Gates was like the epitome of a two-sport athlete, super athletic overall. And then Henry was kind of like that, just he'll block, be on the line. He's good for Melvin Gordon. I think Hawkinson could be the same thing for a team. I know I said the George Kittle comp is an obvious, easy one, but I don't want to go that route, so I'm figuring I'm going to go Hunter Henry.
No, yeah, neither of them. I thought both of them were kind of – didn't fit the Kittle mold for me. This is going to be the weirdest comp probably ever. Rex Burkhead. I know that sounds crazy. But I know Rex Burkhead's like 6 inches shorter and like 30 pounds less. And he's a running back. But I just like the way he plays football and like he catches passes and he blocks like out of the backfield. I couldn't help but see Rex Burkhead when I saw TJ Hockenson play. And it's like a crazy comp because they're nowhere near. And, you know, if Rex Burkhead was 6 inches taller and a tight end, I think he would be TJ Hockenson. But no, that's, yeah. I know.
I said earlier in the podcast that I thought Gronk was like Fant. I think if you're going to compare someone to Gronk, I think Hockenson fits that mold way more. I just had a mock come out on Scorecrow. I had the Patriots. I controlled them because I did all the AFC teams. I gave him Hockenson a 32 because if Gronk retires, Hockenson can just go right into that role and you won't even notice a difference, I think.
Yeah, I love that. Although it'd be like even a more versatile Gronk, but there's definitely some. I see what you draw that parallel there. Yeah, he's a fun player to watch, man. So if you don't know much about him, please go out and watch him. All right, that concludes our Big Ten for the tight ends. So that's going to be a hotly debated thing, and it's basically comes down to preference. I think both players are amazing. Both players are very good at a lot of things, and it's these are the first two. We're going to dive into a lot of tight ends, but there's a lot of really good tight ends in this class. And you've done all of them now, right? You're through your breakdowns.
No, I'm all done. This is pre combine.
Correct.
Yeah. If you want to talk about my top five for just a second, just your instant reaction.
Yeah, just real quick.
Hockenson, Fant, Irv Smith Jr. from Alabama is number three. Caden Smith, number four from Stanford, I really like a lot. I got him with my last pick in our rookie draft for Dynasty Happy Hour. And then number five, I got Dax Raymond from Utah State, someone I saw down in Mobile. A lot of people are really high on Dawson Knox, and I'm not necessarily down on Dawson Knox, but I think the combine is where he's really going to excel. Right now, I don't have him in my top 10 just because the tape kind of limited him, but he's going to be kind of like that Riley Ridley type argument that you have for receiver and Josh Jacobs for running back and Dwayne Haskins with 1 year at quarterback. Dawson Knox is that argument for the tight ends where he didn't have a lot of production. I mean, he was going with the Marcus Lodge, Jordan Wilkins last year, running back now at Indianapolis, AJ Brown and DK Metcalf, who looks like Superman and whatnot. But he didn't get the targets, and that's not his fault. That's just because he's on a loaded team. Right. I think the combine is where he's really going to show out, and I think he could jump up to the top. He could potentially replace Dax Raymond. I'm really high on Caden Smith, so I don't think he'll jump that high. But, I mean, he could jump the whole way up to number five after a good combine.
Right, I think he also will be one of those players that will probably – it'll take him a couple years. Yes. But I think in, like, 2022, we'll be talking about him as, the third-year breakthrough type of player. Got one more Big Ten. This one I'm so excited about. You know me. I want to talk about my boy Quinnen Williams. So, tail of the tape. We did Joey Bosa on our last episode for the Devi Happy Hour. Just did five on him. I'm going to do 10 on Quinnen Williams, and I will try to stop talking at 10 minutes. Tail of the tape real quick for Quinnen, 6'3", 285. He turns 22 in December. He played in 9 games last year very sparingly, 11 tackles, 2 sacks. And this year he played full-time. He contributed 71 tackles, 8 sacks, 19.5 tackles for a loss, and he is squarely in the running for the number one pick. So I will divert to you briefly. I'll get your brief impressions and stuff, but like, what did you see first when you watched Quinnen Williams play?
I see someone who is potentially the best defensive player in the draft. I mean, the talk's all about Bosa, but I think Quinnen got a Heisman vote, for the love of God, because he's playing so well. I messaged you earlier telling you, because you were getting all giddy talking about Quinnen Williams in our chat. I said, I can't remember who it was. It was a draft analyst from either Draft Network or NFL Network. And they were trying to watch Christian Miller on Alabama. And they said, Quinnen Williams, they had to keep yelling at their screen. Quinnen, could you stop distracting me? I'm trying to watch the other players here. Because he's just on tape. He's insane. I mean, all year everyone wanted to talk about Raekwon Davis being the top defensive lineman at Alabama, but Quinnen Williams just wouldn't have anything of it. So it's just – I think he could be an instant impact on whatever team he goes to. He can be a run stopper. He can be a pass rusher if he needs to. I think if there's one – there's no Aaron Donald comp, so I'm not even going to make that but I think this is just a fun one just because of the way he plays and how physical he can be at times. I like Warren Sapp a little bit, just without being as talky and as much of a pass rusher, but just as far as a big body taking up space and so on.
All right, you're getting ahead, man. We're not to the player comps yet. Come on.
This is your thing. I want to get all my points out of the way.
All right. You can just do something with him. Yeah, my initial thing that I noticed the most was his first step and his explosion off the line. I never once seen him jump off line, which is amazing, or jump off sides, which is amazing with his first step and the way he explodes. It helps set up, you know, like his hands, and it throws so many plays off just because of how he explodes. It's crazy. I mean, the only way to explain it is just explosion. It's nuts to watch him. He's often in the back. I'll get to the biggest detriment that I hear about him constantly over and over is that he played on a loaded defensive line and he didn't see, but he saw a lot of double teams. Like often the center would just almost let him go because he couldn't stop him. So he would get, you know, another guy thrown at him too, or the running back, or you know, whatever. He saw tons of double teams. So I don't want to say that, but the first step is what really impressed me about him. And then as far as the strengths in his game overall, his hands are so quick and they're so strong. If he does get engaged at the line, he can easily like just maneuver his way around. He's incredibly strong and quick. His awareness, he has this awareness in the run game, which is unreal. Like if he's out of the play or if I think he's almost a better run stopper than he is a pass rusher, and he's an amazing pass rusher. So to see what he does, he's in the backfield on many, many plays, getting the ball at the same time the running back did, and you just feel sorry for the running back getting hit by a 6'3", 290-pound dude. And just relentless. His motor is incredible. He fights through double teams. I've seen him a couple plays do like double moves where he would do a move to set up the first guy and then transition into the second move and make the second guy look like an idiot. Like that's not easy to do. You know, most guys can get past that first guy. Then when the second guy gets in there, they're screwed. You know, they're out of the play.
Yeah, that was an impressive thing for me. Like you just said, the two moves thing where a lot of players like make their bread and butter in college with one move and then maybe develop some when they turn pro. He's already got a full arsenal he's working with, which is just insane. He's going to be one up on everyone already.
Yeah, like I mentioned with Bosa, that he relies very much on his outside speed rush, which is an amazing speed rush, but that's not really a thing in Quinnen game, being he plays inside. But the weakness is he's only a one-year starter, so he's got things to learn, which is a weakness. I don't know. That's scary.
I look at it as, and I can't remember, I heard this too somewhere, but it just made so much sense, where a lot of players, no, it was with David Sills, who was talking about it on, we almost went a whole episode without saying it, he was talking about it on Stick to Football, where when he transitioned to wide receiver, so easy to learn everything because he had never played receiver before. And Quinnen Williams really having this one big year of production. Yeah, he's had years of coaching, but as far as in-game applying it, he's going to be very easy to coach, I think, at the next level because he doesn't have all that taped overlook and overanalyze and so on and so forth. Not the same as David Sills, because that was just a whole position, but it's an easy comparison, I think.
Then Combine, do you have any expectations of what he's going to do at the Combine?
He's just gonna wreck shit.
Yeah, he's gonna be like 125 reps or something, and obviously he won't be the quickest cat there. He's 290 pounds, but
do you think he'll do more than Saquon did? How many reps did Saquon do?
I don't know. I don't talk about offensive players. No, I'm just kidding. I actually don't remember. I think it was like 30 something, wasn't it? I have to look that up, but I bet he'll be good on the agility too, because he watched. Oh, yeah. His movement is amazing for his size. He's very fluid. He transitions really well out of – yeah, he's a fun guy to watch. Holy crap.
29 reps.
Yeah, there you go. I bet it'll be pretty good. I think he might stop just to, you know, take a break. For everyone. Then as far as a comp, I mean, it's so hard to find a comp. I heard him – Gerald McCoy was one that I heard a lot, and I hate it, but I – His comparison to Aaron Donald is so ridiculous. I don't think he'll be quite the pass rusher,
Aaron Donald is on a different level completely.
Yeah, but he will be his college stats were actually very similar to Aaron Donald's. I looked it up earlier. He didn't have quite as many tackles for loss, but he had like the same amount of tackles and sacks. But I think he's got that potential to be that type of player for a defensive line. That one that he's going to be in the NFL for 10, 12 years and just be the anchor in someone's line. And I will not be the least bit surprised if he is the most successful player out of this class. Like,
I'm not going to argue.
That's enough of me geeking out on Quinn and Williams. We actually, on our Big Tens, didn't come anywhere near our 10 minute on any of them.
Yeah, we talked about,
we might have to do some more questions in there or something.
Yeah, figure it out. We're playing this. We're waiting it for a lot of us. We're just having fun.
Yeah, we'll just do a little more time on Debo then. Debo is going to be our Power 5 of the week. We'll do a quick tail of tape for him. He's 5'11" and a half, so we'll say 6 foot. 216, he just turned 23, so he's a little bit on the older side. He was a four-year player, had some injury-wrecked seasons, but his sophomore year, he did play 10 games. He caught 59 balls for 783 and only one touchdown. But then his senior year, he played 12 games, caught 62 balls, 882, and 11 touchdowns. And then proceeded to wreck the Senior Bowl.
Oh, yeah. He owned the Senior Bowl. I mean, and I've told this story 1,000 times, and I seriously think it's my favorite thing I heard down in Mobile was just when he was asked, do you think your injuries are a concern for NFL teams? And he goes, the way I played this year, I think should answer that question for every team, so there's no need to talk about it.
He was just stressed.
I thought that was the most, and I can't believe I'm going to use this term, just the most gangster type of answer that he could potentially give. Like, yeah,
that's how you need to answer that question.
Yeah, and one of those things where it was kind of like, wow, I was worried about asking bad questions. I was like, why would you kind of just throw that out there? But no, the way he handled it, I loved it. And that was before the first day of practice, and there was practice later that day. And he came out looking like he just wanted to make everyone pay for the injuries he's had with the hamstrings and everything else.
What stood out when you watched him? Like, what was the first thing you noticed?
There's so much. I'd probably say just how clean his routes are and how quick his feet are, like on his curls and his flats. And he's lining up on the outside, inside, which for a lot of receivers, like for A.J. Brown, everyone's worried that he's lining up just in the slot. Debo is lined up in the slot and on the outside as well. So I don't think that's going to be a problem for him. But just how clean his routes were is what I saw down in Mobile and then I saw down on tape when I watched him.
What you just alluded to is what stood out to me is how versatile he is. He can line up inside, outside. He returns kicks. He's an electric kick returner. So just how versatile he is. I think he can play any role any team asks him. So beyond that initial impression, what were things that you really loved about him? Then you kind of touched on him a little bit. But
I love the thing I haven't really touched on yet, but just how he got his name Debo as the bully from the movie Friday. He plays like a bully. I mean, he's hitting people. He's physical going over receivers. On one play I was watching against Clemson this year where he went off for 220 yards and 2 scores. Like the defensive lineman or defensive back in him had been going back and forth all game. And right off the rip on press coverage, he kind of like punches Debo in the face sort of with like a slap type of move. And Debo just swims, pushes. I don't even know what the move was. It was so quick. I had to watch it a couple times. Just on a quick slant, gets the touchdown, and then just drops the ball and looks back at the guy. And it's like, yeah, you tried your best, and you did your own little move, and I still got the best of you. It wasn't Trayvon Mullen, but still, regardless, it was fun to see the corner try to imply the force, and then Debo was like, well, that's cute. Watch this.
Right. Those are the same things I put. His route running, how tough he was, physical. But he can go deep and he tracks deep balls really well. That's not his forte, I think. No. But he still can do it. And the biggest detriments probably everybody's going to bring up the injury history and then probably his age. But other than that, I thought he was a very complete receiver. Did you notice any other like weaknesses?
The injuries, like you said, is just going to be the easiest thing brought up. His freshman year only played 5 games, and then in 2017 played 3 games for the same thing with a hamstring, or as the fantasy footballers put it, soft tissue issue. It seems like last year he really put that behind him. But as far as a con, I just for stuff I put on there, after he gets the ball, he doesn't have a lot of moves, but he can learn those 50-50 balls at times, depending on how physical the coverage is and how waxed it is. I don't want to say he doesn't win it, but he just kind of loses the ball a little bit. And then I think the offensive play calling down in South Carolina with Bentley and Brian Edwards being there, who he talked up for next year being down in Mobile. He wasn't the top weapon there, so he's not going to have the flashy stats that Tylan Wallace or Rondale Moore and Andy Isabella will have where they're on a team and they're going to be the top weapon. So, and it's and Will Muschamp, I'm a Florida fan, so I know exactly how his team works, and he's more about defense, and offensively he's more of like a power guy, so the receivers don't get all the flashy stuff. But I think if he goes to the right team, I think he'll be an instant impact receiver.
Right, and he alluded on Stick to Football, transition to the combine, that he's going to surprise some people at the combine. I think he's going to try to murder the 40, and you can see how his agility, I bet his three cone's going to be off the chart.
Yeah, Debo's just, he's very clean with everything. So it's one of those things where, and he'll interview well. Like I watched a thing today with his brother, where his older brother was in jail twice when he was going to college, and he's kind of taking care of the family at this point, and everyone looks up to him. So he's used to playing with that pressure, which all a lot of NFL players do. But it's just one of those things where it's an extra edge he has, and I think that's part of the reason why he plays the way he does.
And then for Debo, who do you see as a player comp for him?
I'm not going to do what I texted you because it's too much too soon. I will say for anybody listening, it rhymes with Onio and ends in Oun.
Antonio Gown. Yes.
From Italy. He's not Antonio Brown. It's one of those things where there's a couple things I saw and I was like, wow, that's what he does. I think a better comp for him is an Adam Thielen type, just because Thielen's such a good route runner, and that's where he kind of makes his bread and butter. You can make the same thing with Stephon Diggs. I think that Stephon Diggs is even potentially even a better comp. Just Minnesota wide receivers, if you take Aldrick Robinson out of it. So I would probably say Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen type, where he's not going to burn you. He's not going to jump over you and pull like a Hakeem Butler type of thing. But his routes are so clean and his footwork is so nice that's how he's going to beat you.
Right. I actually saw the Stephon Diggs one, and my comparison is whatever. Like you said, I'm not good at this. I actually thought it reminded me a lot of Allen Robinson when Allen Robinson was good his first couple years at Jacksonville.
See, so, I have Robinson as my call for another player, which I won't give away because
right. I kind of there's just a lot of things that I liked about Allen's game. Yeah, Allen was a little bit taller, but
yeah.
There's a lot of things that I liked about it. Just a good, strong overall game. And Debo's one that's going to be climbing up, and he's going to get some love. And speaking of love, being this is our Valentine's Day special, we want to give first, before we get into our love of players, I want to make sure that everybody listening to this knows that while she's here standing in the kitchen, that we all are very appreciative and loving of our wives and significant others that put up with us, that love this game so much and spend this time doing this, that we are very, very appreciative of this. I realize you guys are probably all listening to this on like in your car on the way home or something, but make sure you go home and tell your wife how awesome she is and all that for tolerating us and all this that we do with football. So before we get started in that,
how much longer we're going to be on that note. So
we all put up with a lot of stuff. Like my wife's letting me go to Indianapolis and Nashville. And yeah, I mean, hoping I don't get a boiling rabbit when I come back, but on the stove, but so
be okay.
For the another part of our Valentine's Day special, I'm going to try to insert some cheesy Valentine's music here. We're going to each pick a player that we want to give our Valentine's to. We're each going to do a Debbie player and an incoming rookie. So Andrew, we're going to first start with your Debbie player. Who would you like to give your Debbie Valentine to this year?
I'm going to give, as a Valentine's Day gift to my player, a cork gun, because he gets in trouble with BB guns. Tyree Cleveland, wide receiver from Florida. I'm going to stick to my home and players I know. Tyree Cleveland. He returned to Florida this year. He could have gone pro. I think he would have been okay in this class, but I think going back another year is good for him at the same time. 6'2", 205-pound receiver. He can be a burner. He has a lot of he doesn't have a lot of receptions, but he has a lot of yards because he breaks off big plays. Plus, he got my Valentine because of the 69-yard touchdown he got against Tennessee that won the game, because I can't lose to Tennessee because I'll lose my mind. So, yeah, Tyree Cleveland got my Valentine for deadly players.
I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to stick close to home. A guy that's not on anybody's radar, most likely, but it should be. Guy from Michigan State, Cody White. He's going to be a junior this year. Has not put up the most eye-popping stats because Michigan State has frankly been absolutely stone age in their offense lately. But Cody White is 6'3", 210. And when he has played, he has looked like he is by far the best player on the field. I don't care who they're playing. And it includes Ohio State, Michigan. I absolutely love watching this guy play. He creates separation. He's incredibly quick, great route running. I hope so much that Michigan State does something offensively this year and somebody can actually see, because I think he will still be in the NFL regardless of what happens. And he's going to get my Valentine. He's a player I absolutely just love. And
you still have Brian Lewis as your quarterback this year?
Yeah.
He's going to be an investment for the NFL future for Debbie.
She said she's putting on waiters. It's getting thick in here, giving Valentine's out. I take back. I redact everything I said.
Yeah, I told my wife, as you said that you were saying how patient our wives are and how wonderful they are. And she goes, I know I'm patient and how lucky you are to have me.
So they are. And I do tell her that even when we're off the camera or microphone, whatever.
So you see how my wife is on Twitter for you listeners. She's a barbarian.
So anyways, that's our Debbie players that we want to give Valentine's to. And then the incoming rookie class. Andrew, who would you like to give your incoming rookie Valentine to?
I think this player should get two Valentines. One from me and one from Tyree Jackson, because I think Tyree Jackson has any sort of draft prospects because of this player, Anthony Johnson, wide receiver from Buffalo. I keep going back to players from the Senior Bowl, but it was just the ones I got to see in person, and they're really sticking out to me. 6'2", 207. He adjusted to so many deep balls that Tyree Jackson threw that either were going to be just horrible incompletions or just going to be something completely wacky that you're going to be scratching your head with. He had a lot of long touchdowns, a lot of multiple touchdown games. So his production's fantastic. But as far as how he projects to the NFL and everything, I think he'll be probably around 3-4 guy, maybe even dipping around 5, depending on the run of defensive players and whatnot goes on. But I think for fantasy-wise, I think he's one I'm trying to own a lot of places. So I think I got him. I got it in the third round of one league and then the fourth round of another rookie draft. So for anyone listening that still has rookie drafts going and is not a degenerate like all of us where we're doing our rookie drafts 2 months before the draft, I think Johnson's a name to watch for.
Yeah. Anyways, I can get behind that one fully. Mine, every year I have a man crush on a shifty slot receiver. Last year it was Anthony Miller. This year it's Andy Isabella. He's 5'10", 190, came from UMass, and he had a hell of a year this year. Led the nation in receiving with 1,698 yards, 13 touchdowns. It's just one – you watch what he does in an offense that was horrible. And he just he runs after the catch. He's just a prototypical, like, slot guy. Like, he reminds me a lot of a slightly smaller Julian Edelman. He plays with that tenacity. You know, and you want to see that coming out of college, especially a small school like that. He may have I think he'll have some bumps in the road like Anthony Miller did this year. It's going to be a little bit of an adjustment game, but I think in 2 or 3 years, we'll be talking about him as one of the top 3 or 4 slot receivers in the game. So I absolutely love Andy Isabella. He's been planting my flag this year with Mr. Isabella.
Yeah, no, he's going to run fast in the 40 is where his bread and butter is going to be and where people are going to really pop off about him. So I think with him, I mean, Denzel Ward ran a 4.32, and if you've seen the video on Twitter, Isabella just torches Ward in this race in high school. So, both players are older now and developed and have more weight, yada, 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 yada. But, I mean, if he runs a 4.3, I mean, it'll be insane.
Bengals will take him at 12.
Yeah, probably.
Dumbasses. And for anybody listening, I do not give my Valentine to any member of the Cincinnati Bengals team. Anyways, all right, that will wrap up our show for this week. So real quick, Andrew, will you tell everybody where they can find your work? You got a lot of stuff going on right now.
He's got a lot of stuff going on. You can find me over at Dynasty Happy Hour. Not writing too much right now, but we obviously got Devi Happy Hour, which you're hopefully listening to. Then also to I know, telling people to listen to the show that we're recording.
If you're not listening to this, you're not listening to it. Anyways.
Anyway, I'm working on hopefully getting some stuff together for an NFL draft show, because I'm not cool enough to have an Airbnb in Memphis with all my friends that are going to be at the draft. But I'll hopefully have a show put together here soon for details. A lot of articles coming out for the Score Crow, so just look out for those.
And did you say they can find you on Twitter at @DHH_Mandrew? I don't know if you said that or not. And then, if he didn't, that's where you can find him. He just clips 1,000. 1,000 listens. 1,000 tonight.
Hear what my crappy opinion is. So every time my wife tells me I'm not winning an argument, I'm like, well, there's 1,000 people that want to hear what I have to say.
Exactly. See how that goes.
Yeah.
So you can find me on Twitter at @FFPeoplesChamp. I am writing for Dynasty Happy Hour and also now writing for Dynasty Trade Calculator. I haven't found, not sure exactly what I'm doing there yet. We're still kind of early in the process, but most likely be just covering the draft and stuff. And we got this podcast. We also have another podcast, Devi Owner's Manual. We do that one every couple weeks. That one focuses on the strategy of Devi. And this podcast, once again, at Devi Happy Hour and on Gmail at devihappyhour@gmail.com if you want to send us any questions. So like that, I wish everybody happy Valentine's Day. And once again, be thankful for your wife or spouse or significant other. All right, everybody. Talk to you next week.